Hey, time for the retrospective. And look, I got my shit together in time to do a review of Friday the 13th on actual Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
I keep saying that I was going to do that and I kept like forgetting
It's actually
about.
Friday the 13th, part one and two.
Yeah, we're going to do the first two because really, I don't think it's a terribly controversial opinion to say that those are kind of the best ones.
Yeah, I think they're the best
Really,
ones
kind of the
because
only ones worth
three
watching.
wasn't that good. I thought it was good until I saw it again recently and I was like, man, I like that movie.
They're all fun, but it's like, and I feel like the kills got more creative as it went on. But as a from a quality standpoint of being like a quality slasher movie, I think the first two are the best. And really,
The second one.
the second one I think is the best one. And I don't really think that we're the only like horror fans that say that.
Yeah.
Most people like the second one the
They're
best, I
both good,
think.
but the second one's a lot more professional.
Yeah, I definitely think so. So basically, it's so funny to think about how just some bullshit little thing that, some movie makers wanted to make, like, to essentially Sean Cunningham, who directed and produced the first one. He was like, he saw Halloween in 1978, and he was like, that's a cool movie. That's making a lot of money. Let's rip it off.
Yeah, he said, let's rip that shit off.
Yeah. Now,
Exactly.
he said that he didn't say it, but like the writer, Victor Miller, said that
Yeah.
that's exactly what he said. He's like, that's an exact quote. We're just going to
Just
rip off Halloween.
smart idea.
It was because, Halloween only cost what, like $300,000 or $400,000 and made like
Made a lot of profit.
zillions of dollars. And, in much the same way, Friday the 13th kind of spawned a massive franchise, which is hilarious considering how, I mean, the first movie was just, there was hardly anything to it. It cost them only a little over $500,000 to make. And it ended up making in 1980 dollars, like 60 million bucks, which is something like 120 million
Yeah.
in like today's money.
There was some trickery going on in this movie when you think about it, though.
Trickery.
There's no real proof that the first one took place on Friday the 13th. And I don't think the second one took place on Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Maybe the first one kind of took place on Friday the 13th.
They
And
did
then.
say, Betsy Palmer, who played Mrs. Voorhees, she does say that today is his birthday.
And that was Friday the 13th.
I guess,
It doesn't come out and say it.
and in the second one, when they're sitting around the campfire, like talking about it, they say every Friday the 13th, blah, 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 or something like
Right.
that. So they do make reference
They
to
make
it.
reference to it, but they never really prove that that's when it's happening. They just leave it kind of vague.
Yeah.
It's just the title.
Well, because it's a good
And
title.
yeah, and then another thing is that the second movie was supposed to be taking place at the same location but in another camp. They go to walk to the old camp where part one happened.
Walking like
They're walking like that, and they never
that.
got there.
Yeah, no, they did
They
because there
did?
was like a chain and they like stepped over it and then the cops came. Like
Yeah,
as soon as they never got to the
they
actual
never
camp
got to the
because
actual
they didn't shoot
camp.
it in the same place.
They didn't shoot it in the same place. And I was going, yeah, let's see what that fucker looked like still, you know what I mean? And they never got to it again, which that's kind of cheating, but okay.
Well, not really because, you just had to do what you had to do. Like
They
I
did what they
said,
had to do.
the kind of the amazing thing, and it's funny because we have, I think we have all of the Friday the 13th movies or
No, just first three.
just the first three.
Yeah.
So we have those on Blu-ray. So we watched like all the extra shit. And Sean Cunningham, it's funny because, he kind of distanced himself, not because he didn't like it, but just because he was like working on other shit. And it's just hilarious how this little ripoff of Halloween that he made for like $550,000
Yeah.
grew to become this fucking massive franchise. What is it, like 12 movies, counting the one,
Yeah.
the crossover with Freddy or whatever? And, people still, he's one of the most iconic Jason, he's one of the most iconic horror villains. And it's just funny how they just came up with this nothing idea and spent no money on it. They filmed it in New Jersey. It was actually shot at an actual Boy Scout camp, which apparently is still open.
Yeah, it looked like shit back
Like,
then,
it
though.
looks like crap.
It
And
looked
so I
like
was,
shit.
for some reason, like, I thought that I remembered reading that yes, it was a real camp, but it was abandoned or it was gonna be
That's what I
abandoned
thought, yeah.
because it looks like it was or should have been
It's a bunch
abandoned.
of log cabins and it looks pretty cruddy. I mean, it looked cruddy back then. I can't imagine what it would look like now. Those can't be the same
Well, it might
cabins.
have been like renovated at
Maybe
this
they
point because it's a Boy
tore that.
Scout camp.
They must have tore that down, built some new
And
shit
Bill, I
on it.
hope they did because man,
Because
that looked really
it looked like it was getting ready to fall down in the first
in
movie.
1980.
Yeah. Because I was watching the first one again and I was just remembering, I was like, man, I didn't remember that camp looking that crappy, which actually helps to make it scary.
Yeah, because it's a real location, yeah. And it looks
crappy,
like shit on toast.
Yeah,
and that really kind of helps amp up the suspense and everything.
Paint's all old. The bathrooms look all fucked up. And
It looks like every available surface is just crawling with bacteria and worms and everything.
Looks like
that.
It stinks in there.
Oh, I'm sure.
Cheap furniture.
I'm sure it did. So this whole thing and what you were saying about Friday the 13th like reminded me. The whole thing, when they were first working on the script, because I think that Sean Cunningham pretty much sold the idea before the script was even done. He's basically like, well, we're doing a slasher movie, kind of like Halloween, but set out in the woods, like with campers and shit. And so the original draft of the script, I think, was called, Camp Blood or something about, like, lost something at Camp Blood or murders at Camp Blood or something like that. So then he came up with the idea of, he was like, oh, let's call it Friday the 13th because it's like another holiday sort of thing. So they thought that that would be kind of a cool idea. And initially, this is interesting too, and this is something I didn't know. This was similar to the idea that John Carpenter had for Halloween. Initially, after Friday the 13th came out and it was like a massive success, it was like lines around the fucking block to see it and everything. When they were talking about maybe having to do another one, he wanted to do an anthology series, just like John Carpenter wanted to do after Halloween 2, where he's just like, well, I want to make a movie that comes out every year that's called Friday the 13th, blah-de-blah, but it's not the same character, it's not the same theme. It's always like, kind of variations on a theme, but they were all like going to be standalone movies. But that's not how it worked out, obviously. Now, most people will know, and I don't think this is like a fucking spoiler alert or anything like that, but the first Friday the 13th, which came out in 1980, Jason is not really in it, except as a kid, and even then, when they show him at the end, you could argue that that was a dream sequence, which I think it kind of is, which is how they kind of backdated it, like when they did the fucking sequel. So Jason's mom, Mrs. Voorhees, Pamela Voorhees, played by veteran actress Betsy Palmer, is the killer.
Yeah, she didn't want to be in it.
It's hilarious because, she had been like in like really like fucking kind of upscale sort of movies, and I guess she'd been on TV and everything, and she was kind of older at this point. Not that old, but she
about
was
50 probably.
Yeah, she was like an older actress, and they sent her this script for some reason. She wasn't the first choice. I think there was like another similar type of TV or stage actress that they approached but who turned it down. And so they give her the script, and she basically said, and she has been quoted as saying that she thought the script was, quote-unquote, a piece of shit.
Yeah.
But because they said they were going to pay her $10,000, and she happened to need a new car at the time, she was like, sure, why not?
Yeah.
But she did seem to get into it later because she was saying, she's been at, like, a lot of conventions and shit like that nowadays, but she said that the method acting that she used, she's like, once I decided that I was going to be in this fucking slasher movie, she's like, I wanted to get a bead on, like, the character. So she's like, so they told me about, in wardrobe, she had this class ring that she wore, which you can kind of see in the movie, even though most of the time when they show the hands, it's not her hands, it's like the stuntman or whatever. But she said, so that put me back in the 1940s when I was really in high school. And so she came up with this whole elaborate backstory of like her having sex with her boyfriend back at the 40s at high school and getting pregnant with Jason. And then like her parents like disowned her, and then Jason was born and he was strange, in her words. I guess she didn't want to
say
like...
She said a mongoloid.
That's what they told her.
That's what they told her. She's like, what kind of movie is this?
I know. And it's really funny because I think a lot of times, especially with productions kind of as low budget as this, some of the actors didn't know like what type of movie they were getting. Like the guy that's in it that plays like the kind of jokey character, the one that's always like running around with the fucking headdress and all that kind of crap.
Yeah. Goofball.
He didn't know that it was a slasher movie. He basically thought it was just like kind of summer teen drama or something like that. Yeah. And then he's like, because they only gave me like a page of the script like to read. And then I get the part. And then he's like, hey, you need to come in and like wear a bathing suit. And he's like, what the fuck kind of movie is this all of a sudden? And then he reads the whole script and he's like, and it's all bloody and everything. So a lot of people were confused about what type of movie it was going to be.
They probably did that on purpose because they're probably afraid they'd back out.
Maybe they would, because you have to think, I mean, now, You know, nowadays I feel like it's not the stigma that it once was, like, to be in horror movies. Because I feel like...
Back then, they didn't like it.
It was like, I was almost like doing porn. It's like, once you did that, it was kind of like you were ruined forever.
Yeah,
and
your
career was gone. Your career was over, which is kind of hilarious to think of. I mean, in the first movie, in case you guys didn't know, the one that came out in 1980, Kevin Bacon was in that shit.
Yeah.
It wasn't his first movie. I think he'd been in, like, another kind of cheap-ass movie before that, but it didn't hurt his career.
What's funny is that these cheap-ass movies stood the test of time. They're all remembered. There's a bunch of classics that are all forgotten.
Yeah, I think, but like, a lot of dramas and stuff like that that came out in 1980, people don't talk about them as passionately.
Yeah.
And we've kind of talked about that before, and, like, I was thinking about it when... we were watching a lot of the extras that are on the Friday the 13th DVDs, where they have, like, all these interviews with all the, you know, people that were in it, like, at the conventions and stuff. And I feel like, I mean, horror fans and sci-fi fans are, like, the most loyal fucking people. And it's like, they, if you were in a movie, like, back in fucking 1968, and it was just, like, some little part in some, like, really good horror movie, people will remember you forever.
Yeah, that woman that played Jason Voorhees... The mom, she had no idea. She just, when it made all that money, she just couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
She just couldn't believe it. And then she came back and did the sequel, too. And if you look,
briefly.
But they wanted her to come back. What was that, like in part five or part six?
Yeah, I think something they asked her to come back. Or it might have been the Freddy versus Jason that they asked her to come back.
She said that she cared about the character. She said the lines that the character had, she said it was just shit. She wouldn't do it.
Yeah, she thought the script was dumb.
She said if she was going to come back as the mom, she was going to have a real role and have, you know what I mean, a real part in the movie.
Yeah, she's like, I'm an actress, goddammit.
Yeah, so it's kind of, I think that's kind of cool that she, you know, probably did right by the fans and that character by not, you know, selling that character out. Because if you're going to use that character, fucking use it.
Oh,
and
yeah,
she
definitely.
Hasn't changed much. She looked a lot like, she looked exactly like she did, at least.
Pretty much. I mean,
she's in her 80s.
Yeah.
And she looked about the same.
I mean, that was, the convention that they shot for the DVD, I think it was from 2008.
Yeah, which would have made her 70s in the 70s.
I don't know. Has she passed away at this point?
I don't know.
I didn't think that she had.
I would think she'd be in the 70s, and she was still in good shape.
Yeah.
And she was talking about being in a movie 10 years prior to that, so she would have still looked the same.
Yeah.
And I think that might have ended up being her main source of income later on in life. She was, like, into
it.
Doing the...
She does all the conventions and
all
stuff?
The conventions.
She shows up in the sweater.
Yeah. Same haircut.
Adorable.
Yeah.
It's adorable.
Yeah.
And it's just funny that, like I said, back in the day when, you know, when horror movies were kind of, like, looked at askance, particularly in the late 70s and early 80s when, you know, there was still kind of that grindhouse aesthetic, or, you know, that people had that perception of horror movies. Like I said, it was almost kind of like porn. That's where you went.
They were for kids, though. It wasn't respected.
Yeah. You know, it was like teenagers and shit like that, which was the audience that they were trying to...
That's when I first saw it.
You know, that they were trying to get to, but it's just funny, like you said, that those movies have stood the test of time. I mean, Friday the 13th, for Christ's sake, which, if you see it nowadays, in light of all the horror movies that have come subsequently...
They're lightweights.
It really doesn't seem like anything, and it really doesn't seem like it would have been such a huge cultural phenomenon. And it's funny that at the time, I guess, you know, in 1980, it was considered pretty gory or pretty shocking. Like, some stuff was cut out of it.
I thought it was. I mean, I first saw it probably, like, on HBO and Cinemax. They would run part one and part two on the same night so you could watch them. You know what I mean?
Double feature.
They had that shit fucking running all the time, especially during the summers. And I never saw them in the theater. I saw them on cable. And they scared the shit out of me. I'd be up in Mississippi for the summers in wooded areas, you know what I mean? And just Jason was outside every window after seeing
you would
that.
Think it was Jason at this window.
The main draw, you know, me and other guys my age, you know, we'd fucking stay up late watching that shit, you know, sneaking drinks and shit. You know, we were probably, you know, 13, 14, around that time. And the main draw was they were cute girls in it.
Yeah.
And the shit was scary.
Yeah.
And we thought it was gory, but I went back and looked at it, you know, just the past couple of days we've been watching them. No, there's not much in them.
Hardly anything.
There's hardly any in them. It's mostly just suggestion.
Especially the first one. And it's interesting because, like I said, that it got so much flack for being gory. And even, like, a lot of the reviews, if you read them, like, from the time that came out at the time, and they're talking about how violent and gory and stuff it is, there's really only two or three scenes, like, of murders. And they look great because Tom Savini did them. This was one of his, you know, first movies. He'd done Dawn of the Dead prior to this, and that's why he got called on to do this movie. And he did, like, the beheading still looks great. You know, there's an axe in the face. There's, you know, the arrow that comes out through Kevin Bacon's neck and stuff. Looks good, but...
It's only a few frames.
It's only, only a couple of frames, so it's just hilarious how... Because I had a perception, too, that it was gory and it had this reputation. And then when you see it now, I'm like, that's it? It's like, I've seen fucking kids' movies gory. I mean, you know, that's a little bit
of an exaggeration. Well, you'll see the axe being swung, and then in the next shot, the axe is already in the head.
It's sticking out of her face,
So it's never, you never actually saw it go in. But in those days, when you were that age, with, you know what I mean, the expectations of the time, in your mind, you saw that axe
go in.
Yeah,
it filled stuff in for you.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the same thing happened with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, that a lot of people, because people had a perception, because of the title, obviously, because it's a very lurid title, and because when you see it, it's just like this really upsetting, like gross, like gritty experience, but when you see it again, there's nothing. There's like hardly anything in it.
And we were, man, we were kids. We fucking loved this shit, man. It was just like, the movies were tailored to, like, the male gaze, all right?
Bouncing boobies everywhere.
Man, it was illegal to wear a bra back in his
nobody
era.
Nobody had bras.
And it must have been cold as shit. It
That's
must have
all
been
we're saying.
Cold as shit. Just headlights, man. Every fucking wear.
Everybody had their
And I was watching it, you know, been watching it. And it was, I remember why I like this shit. I remember why I like this shit.
That's right. Yeah. Well, because the one girl, like especially in part two, that frizzy hair girl, she doesn't ever, like, show her boobs. And actually, in the first one, I don't think they show any boobs, now that I'm thinking about
it. No, but you thought they did.
There's no nudity,
You thought they did, because...
So they did a number on you.
Yeah, it was all suggestion. And when I saw part two again, when I saw that frizzy haired girl, the big old fucking boobs, I was
boing,
like...
Boing, boing,
yeah,
boing,
yeah, and they're, like,
boing.
Pointing out like that, and I'm going, oh, yeah, I remember them boobs.
I remember why I looked
at and for some reason, I thought we'd see him. I thought she was going to pop him out. You never see him.
You
it's
do
just
see
suggesting.
You do see the tall girl, the tall girl that had the dog named Muffin. You do get to see her naked.
And she was really physically fit for that era. I think she was... a swimmer or a...
Maybe she did look like
swimmer
she was
or a
she
tennis
was very
player.
Tall.
She was tall and in real good shape, you know, but that she was kind of... I remember that she stood out back in those days as looking very athletic.
Yeah.
You know, because athleticism wasn't really a big thing for women in late
Not
70s,
Jane
early 80s.
Not until Jane Fonda's aerobics class came along, VHSs.
But, yeah, it wasn't really all that much for men either, you know what I mean? To see a muscle head was kind of unusual. That was some shit down on Muscle Beach.
Yeah, that's true. It wasn't
remember,
really
like, and like, remember
in the mainstream.
In this movie, they kind of had a muscle man, the kid in the wheelchair.
Yeah.
He was pretty built, you know? But he gets killed early, get an axe to the face. And then the damn wheelchair goes down the stairs, and it's like a damn roller coaster. And I remember that scared the shit out of me when I was an
really?
Early teenager.
Just because Jason was like, he doesn't even give a shit that you're in a wheelchair.
And he rolled him down, and I was just like, that shit was traumatizing. And then the damn axe going. We saw it again when it happened. We watched. We laughed, man. We laughed the whole fucking time. That guy going down the stairs. It was kind of funny. To look
it
at it in the context.
I mean, it's not funny if it happened in real life.
I know that, but it's fun. It's funny through the eyes of people our age and like looking back on it.
Going, oh,
good,
look at
yeah,
that.
I remember that shit.
That's hilarious.
It's all a gag. When you see the two movies now through modern eyes, you realize that they're all magic tricks and gags through the whole thing. And the whole edit is one big long gag. Them trying to build up shit, and they're playing with you with the soundtrack, and they're just playing games with you through the thing is it's very good.
Yeah.
It's very
good. The thing is, I think that's what horror fans like and respond to. And people who don't like horror movies or who always like decrying horror movies, I think they all think we're like a bunch of like degenerates or something because we want to see people get chopped up. Yeah. It's not really that. It's almost kind of like watching, you know, you're watching like the artistry or you're watching like how are they going to scare me? How are they going to gross me out? You know what I mean? It's kind of like you're just appreciating the creativity and the art behind it all.
Yeah.
But like I said, you know, since Tom Savini did the first one And this is kind of interesting, too. In the first movie, like I said, where Jason's mom was the killer, that was pretty much where they were going to leave it. Because, you know, they said when we were working on it, we were just trying to do a Halloween ripoff. We were just trying to make our money back. We didn't know that it was going to become this gigantic cultural phenomenon that now everybody knows. You show a hockey mask and a machete, everybody fucking knows who that is.
Yeah, which is not in the first two movies.
Even if they've never seen it. Yeah, and the first two movies, ironically, don't have that.
No.
So, you know, pretty much as soon as it came out, made all the money. I think it was, in terms of how, like, the profit to, you know, how much it cost to make and how much profit it was, I think it was the second most profitable movie, at least for Paramount that year, because Paramount had bought it. There was, like, a bidding war. So, pretty much a year after it came out, Paramount was like, okay, well, we have to make a sequel. Sean Cunningham didn't really want to do it because they said, well, look, our main villain, who is Mrs. Voorhees, she got beheaded, so it'd be a little hard to bring her back.
They brought her back, though.
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to do, you know, Sean Cunningham's idea, which was to do, like, variations on a theme, like I said John Carpenter wanted to do with Halloween, where it was, like, a different story altogether. So they're like, well, why don't we make it Jason, who was the kid in the first one, and then we can just, like, kind of, you know, retcon it and say that... You know, the very famous, like, jump scare at the end of the first one where the, you know, deformed little kid jumps out of the lake and grabs that girl was just a dream. And so Jason wasn't really dead. So, you know, you can kind of, like, see where they were going with that. By the way, in the first movie, that very, very famous jump scare where the kid jumps out of the lake, that was actually not supposed to be the ending. The end was just supposed to be, you know, her in the canoe on the river, and they were going to roll the credits. It was Tom Savini's idea.
Yeah, to give him another jump scare.
He had just seen Carrie, which, as you know, is also another very famous jump scare with, like, Sue putting the flowers, like, dreaming about putting the flowers on Carrie's grave, and then the hand, like, comes up and grabs her arm. And he had just seen that, and he's like, okay, well, we need to end the shit on that. So that's what they did. And then they had the whole thing with her being in the hospital, and they said, you know, we didn't find any little boys, and she's like, well, he's still out there. So it seemed like they left it open for a sequel, even though Sean Cunningham says that wasn't our intention. You know what I mean? That was just kind of like, it just ended like that because we didn't think it was going to be that successful. So in the second one, they bring Jason back, but he's now a grown person. So now it's like you're sitting there trying to, like, figure out what the timeline is, because it's like he supposedly drowned in 1957, because that's what his mom said. And then 1958... all of this shit started happening at the other, you know, like, counselors started turning up dead. It's like, you know, fires started or whatever. And there was, like, a curse, you know, and they closed the camp. And then the first movie, which came out in 1980, but they didn't tell you, like, when it was supposed to be set. It just said present day. So it could be any time. But even then, you know, if they really saw Jason, then he was a little kid still. So is he a ghost? Is he a zombie or whatever? And then the second one, which supposedly happened 5 years after the first one, now he's like a grown person.
Yeah. I remember it, you know, back, like I said, this is 1980, 81. So it's probably, 13, 14, around that. Yeah. But yeah, I would have been about 13, I guess.
Yeah.
I remembered that, you know, me and my buddies were talking about that. Well, wait a minute. You know what I mean?
Wait, this doesn't make any sense.
And then in part two, the female lead explains it. Well, he must not have been dead. The mom just thought he was dead, and he was living out there in the woods all by himself. He saw, you know, her get killed.
That's kind of how I
And that was good enough for us.
Yeah, I was like, okay, that's right. Plausible
we
enough.
We didn't sit there and try to count out the years. Well, how old is he?
Yeah.
We didn't really think about that. They knew the audience of the time. We didn't care.
Yeah.
The idea.
As long as it sounded
right,
plausible enough.
And in that era, we didn't care too much about continuity. Like, Jason looked different every time, but we didn't care.
He did.
We didn't care.
Because it was different actors and different makeup artists.
It didn't matter to us. We just figured that the character was evolving. For us, we knew this was theater.
Yeah.
So it didn't have to be realism. And they weren't selling us realism. They were selling us fantasy. So it was... So what I'm saying is it's the correct decision that they did. Just roll with it. The audience at the time loved it.
And like I said, to be honest, I saw the second one before I saw the first one. Because the second one was on cable all the time.
Yeah, I think so too. I saw the second one first.
Yeah, I saw it like a whole bunch of times. And then finally I went back and saw the first one. So I was already very used to the idea from the second one of Jason being the killer, and also, you know, because they showed, like, at the second one, the whole, like, first 20 minutes of it is basically a rehash of, like, the end of the first one. So you don't really need to see the first one, because that's kind of, like, they show you everything in the beginning of the second one. So, you know, and her, like, Amy Steele, who's, like, the final girl in the second one, she has this kind of, you know, long monologue in the bar where she's talking about Jason and how he must have seen his mom get beheaded, and he was, like, taking revenge on everybody, and maybe he didn't really die, like, he didn't really drown in the 50s like he was supposed to have, which, like you said, to me, that seemed like a pretty plausible explanation. Yeah. It's, like, it's unlikely, sure, but it's a movie, you know what I mean? So the fact that he was just out there living in this, like, shitty little crappy shack that he had made out of, you know, car parts and corrugated iron.
See, I remember seeing, like you said, the second one first, I think.
Yeah.
Because once I saw part one, I remember being kind of surprised and maybe having to watch it a couple of times to realize that it wasn't Jason killing all those people.
Yeah.
Like, I knew the mom killed some of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because Jason was in it. He popped up. You know what I mean? It's just the thinking of the time.
Yeah.
And the order that I saw him in. You know what I mean? I didn't realize that it was Mrs. Voorhees that had killed all of them in the first one.
In the first one, and Jason wasn't even really in it.
That he wasn't really in it. That was a hallucination. Because I saw the second one first.
Yeah.
So I thought he was killing some of them. But, you know, it took me a couple times to realize, you know, when you're 13, 14, you have to... You're just... I just automatically assumed that it was Jason killing a lot of those people. Because I could see man's hands.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? See, it's... the weapons that come down killing people, it's obviously a man's hand.
Yeah.
That's so I was kind of confused. Yeah, I was kind of confused. You know?
And the hilarious thing, too, is the very iconic scene from the first one where Mrs. Voorhees gets beheaded, and you can see her head flying off. It's still a really good effect.
Yeah.
But the hands that come up like, oh, no, where's my head? Those are definitely a man's hands. Yeah, yeah, it's a, you know, you can see it.
Yeah, it's still cool, though.
Yeah, it's
it
like, that's all right.
Didn't matter.
And like I said, I'm willing to, like, suspend my disbelief. But yeah, so the second one, watching both of them together, because we watched them, like, we watched the first one night and then all the extras, and then we watched the second one
tonight.
Yeah, we could.
We gotta watch the third one.
I gotta find some shit to do for matinee, though. That's what, you know, so I probably need to watch that. But we can watch part three, too, if you want to. But the second one, I mean, easily my favorite. Like, you know, probably my favorite kill of the whole series, the very famous sleeping bag kill. That was from the seventh movie, which I think was the last one that I saw in the theater. But in terms of quality filmmaking, you know, if you want to go that route with the Friday the 13th series, definitely the second one is my favorite.
Yeah.
Because I think the first one was a good film. It had, like, some good tension. I liked Betsy Palmer in it a lot. I liked her being the character. I liked that twist. But it's pretty tame. A lot of the times, like, nothing much is really happening. You know, the kids are kind of not annoying. They're all pretty likable. You know, Kevin Bacon's very likable and stuff like that. But they seem a little bit more like caricatures than real people.
It's mostly male gaze shit. Teenage male gaze food.
Yeah. Whereas in the second one, you know, you still get that teenagers in a slasher movie that, well, I guess they're young adults, not really teenagers, but you still get that vibe. But to me, in the second movie, they seem more like real people rather than caricatures. Like, they have, like, what sounds like natural-sounding conversations.
Yeah, Frizzy Boob Girl, her boyfriend was like, you called it. You're like, that's Mick Jagger.
He looks just like Mick Jagger in the face.
That's a young Mick Jagger.
I can't remember what that actor's name is, but he looks just like fucking
I called her Frizzy Boob Girl.
Frizzy Boob Girl.
You don't know any of their names. You forget their names for a reason.
He kept hoping because, like I said, she's very bouncy.
They're doing that shit on purpose, too.
Well, yeah, she's running for toward the phone booth or whatever, and her bikini top is boing, 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 boing. And it's, the one scene of them, like, where they're all at night, like, out, you know, eating at the picnic tables, and, you know, it's like nips everywhere, man.
It was from another era. It was from an era where boys could not get porn on their phone.
Yeah, this is what you had to do back in the day.
Yeah, you
for
had
all
rent
the youngsters out there.
You had to rent horror movies
and hope that there was some tits or some bush in there. Yeah, if you were really lucky.
Exactly, porn was a fucking, you know, porn was a highly controlled substance when you were a kid back in the 70s and the 80s. That'd be like finding a key, a kilo.
It's weird how many dudes that I've known that said they found porn in the woods.
Yeah,
I'm like, how common was that?
I guess it was guys that find it in the garbage. Kids would find it
in the garbage,
and then take it out to the woods to stash it. And then other kids would find it.
They're like, hey, woo, it's our lucky day.
Yeah, it's like finding gold.
Yeah, because I've heard, like, a lot of people say that. I'm like, wow, that seems really weird that so many people are leaving porn in the woods. But, yeah, so the second one, I particularly like Amy Steele in the second one. She's a great final girl. She's also in April Fool's Day, which I think we might be reviewing in a couple of weeks because I love that fucking movie. Yeah. But she's good because she seems like a realistic character, and she seems like she doesn't, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like she doesn't really do anything dumb. It's like once bad shit starts going down and she, like, figures it out, it's like she doesn't always succeed. She gets her ass kicked and everything like that. But she's doing what a normal person would do in that situation without being like, ooh, what a badass I am.
Well, there were these 50s and 60s movie tropes, you know, that the girls were always kind of like damsels in distress.
Yeah.
They didn't have any peripheral vision and you get stabbed from behind. But I think I started to notice it with, like, Alien 1 with Ellen Ripley. People were getting sick of that, so they'd actually make, like, a realistic female character, and she'd be kind of like the heroine of the movie. And she's kind of like a Ripley.
Yeah, like she definitely does seem like
a Ellen Ripley.
Yeah, she just seems to do, like, practical shit.
She tries to talk sense to the dudes, and the dudes are looking at her like, man, get the fuck out of here. Why are you talking?
That's it. We were laughing at that scene. The scene I was talking about in the bar where she's talking about,
trying to explain
it. Maybe Jason's still alive. Maybe he's not just a legend. You know, maybe all the stuff that happened like before, like 5 years ago.
Yeah, she's making perfect sense. She's making perfect sense.
And like her boyfriend and the other, like the kind of Joker character in the bar, like they're looking at her like.
They're looking at each other like.
Why are girls allowed to talk? Why are you talking? Yeah. Just stop talking.
Yes, that's exactly what's going on. But it's like, we both started laughing.
It was just funny the look they were giving her. But it turned out,
I was like, oh yeah, the good old days.
Yeah, but minutes later it turns out that she's right because fucking Jason is running around. Now Jason in this movie, and like I said, if you haven't seen all of the Friday the 13th movies, you may not know that Jason did not get his iconic hockey mask until the third movie. Yeah. So the second one, in this one, he basically just looks like a hillbilly
with a bag
over his head, like the Phantom Killer of Texarkana.
And he's got overalls on and they're not even dirty. Really. They look like new overalls.
He's very clean for some bum that lives out in the woods.
Yeah, and they show his shack. His shack is awesome. He's got his mom's head there and everything. He's putting dead bodies up around where the head was, trying to bring her back to life. It was pretty cool. I liked it.
I didn't realize, as many times as I've seen that movie, because I taped it off like Cinemax or something. I watched it over and over. I don't think I realized until I saw it again recently that the reason that Jason stacked all those bodies there was because he was trying to bring his mom back to life.
Yeah, trying to bring her back to life. Yeah.
I didn't realize that's what he was doing. I thought he just stacked him there because he was going to eat him, or that it's just that's where he
kept him. They were like offerings. You know, he's offering, you know, reaping vengeance, you know, on the people that had killed
him. Going like, check it out, mom.
To bring her back to life.
Yeah, I'm carrying on your work.
And yeah, the thing that's funny about it is that I remember how terrifying that dude was running in a bag. See, bag in his head. See, my Jason really didn't have a hockey mask.
Yeah.
The one that I grew up with. I remembered mostly that damn bag.
Yeah.
And there was something about that bag with the one hole in it and the eye lolling around in it. You know what I mean? That scared me. And we were watching it again last night. He's tussling with that other dude. And I was like, man, Jason's kind of small. That's a little dude.
He's pretty small.
Maybe like, I don't know, 5'8"?
Yeah.
And he's not very
He's like massive. An average size dude.
Actually, the guy he was fighting with was bigger than him.
Yeah.
And I remembered him just being huge.
He was in later movies because he was played by a different dude.
Right. But I just kind of retroactively kind of put that onto the movie,
because
too.
He came across as big and scary because he was a serial killer.
I guess so.
But yeah,
But when they showed his head, he looked cool. He looked like a caveman. Long hair.
They did a good job, even though Tom Savini didn't actually do the effects on the second movie because he didn't like the idea of Jason. Neither him or Sean Cunningham liked the idea of Jason being the villain because they said, well, he was just supposed to be this kid in the first one. He was like a victim, and he was like the motive for the mother becoming a killer. So we didn't really like the idea of Jason coming out and being a killer.
Tom called it, but he called it wrong. He definitely called it wrong because look how much money Jason made.
Well, he worked on later ones.
Yeah.
Like he was just saying that's why he didn't involved in the second
one. But that was the way to go. You just wanted to keep it simple.
Yeah.
They already had a character established. They already had a threat established. You go ahead with that.
Yeah. And you can see why they did that. But like I said, I can respect that he didn't really like that idea. Like I said, I think he did he might have worked on 4 or 5 if I'm remembering
correctly. Tom got what he wanted because he came out with Creepshow.
Yeah,
that's true. What he was talking about. He really wanted to do something like Creepshow.
Well, he prefers doing... He likes doing the gore, but he's more a creature guy. He likes making creatures, which is why he was very excited to do Creepshow, because he got to do Fluffy and everything. But, so I feel like... So whoever did the makeup on the second one did a really good job of, like, making the kid from the first one, who was played by... I think his name's Ari Fletcher or something like that. He's a musician. He was a kid, obviously, when he was in that, and very excited to be in it. But they did a good job of, like, doing, like, a grown-up version of that. It's funny because on the Friday the 13th Part 2 DVD, there was a thing that they did at a convention in 2008, where I think it was in 2008, that Fangoria did, and they had all the people that had played Jason.
Yeah.
So it's had, Ari, who played him as a kid, and then the second guy, whose name I can't remember, he was only in the second one with the bag over his head, which, like I said, it was like the Phantom Killer, so they actually got the bag over the head idea from Town That Dreaded Sundown.
Probably. I know this, though, is that I remember really liking 3. And when I saw 3 recently, about a year ago, I was just like, man, this is crap. It's just bad.
Because it was supposed to be 3D, and it was like just too contrived. Like, it was, look at this thing coming at you.
I want to see it again. I remember the story being pretty bad, but from the last time I saw it. But when I was a kid, I must have been about 14 or 15, I remembered enjoying it.
I liked it too. I saw that in the theater.
It didn't seem to age well, but I want to see it again. And then, I don't know what happened with me and Jason. I broke up with Jason. I just kind of lost. I remembered certain scenes from movies that came after that, but I never really remembered the movies or gave a shit enough. I guess I was maybe outgrowing that story. Yeah. And, I was getting more into, the newer stuff that was coming, like Predator and all that, Predator and T1, Terminator. But next thing I knew after that, I remember there was, Part 10, Jason in Space, and it's just... Sometime
that
in the 90s.
And I was dumb as hell, but it was pretty entertaining.
And I'm just like, no wonder I don't fucking watch Friday the 13th anymore. Like, this shit's terrible.
I feel once they moved him out of the camps, and don't get me wrong, I love Kane Hodder, who played him from, I believe, number 5 on, really, really big, stunt dude. And he's great, and he really, really likes that character, and I think he's played him since then, although I don't think he was in Freddy vs. Jason. They got some other stuntman to play him. But I feel like after Part 7, like I said, Part 7 was the last one that I saw in the theater, and after that I think I saw the other ones, but I didn't really remember them.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? I do feel like once they took Jason out of the camp setting, it's not the same. It's like, Jason takes Manhattan. I don't want to see Jason, running around a city, punching people's heads off and...
I just don't remember them being
in Brooklyn or whatever.
I just don't remember them being any good.
It's just not. It's not the essence of Jason. Yeah. You know what I mean? I feel like he's a woods guy, and there's only so much you can do with that. He's not a space guy. He's not like a city guy.
There might be some good ones out there, but I just remember him just getting hokier and hokier. It was something you could watch for free on cable, and you see it, and you roll your eyes. Oh man, you know what I mean?
That's and bullshit. The remake also wasn't all that good. Yeah. It wasn't terrible, but it's like, I feel like the remake didn't have the essence of it. It just seemed like very generic.
There's supposed to be a Friday the 13th video game you can download.
There's several. Cinemassacre, I think he reviewed it, because there's probably more than one.
And it's supposed to be awesome.
I've heard that it was really good, too. It seems like something we should probably invest in and see. But yeah, I mean, of all of them, the second one has, a special place in my heart, because I probably saw it, 100 times when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And it's, what's hilarious? When we were watching it again last night, I guess this is another thing that never occurred to me. The end of this movie, and apparently this is, I didn't know this, but this is, a big fucking debate among horror fans. Did the guy, Paul, I think was the name of the guy at the end of the movie, did he die or not? Because they never show him.
Never did show it.
They never show it. Because apparently what was supposed to happen at the end of the movie was that they shot this end where, Amy Steele is being loaded into the ambulance because she's the final girl, so she lives. And they're loading her in, and she's like, where's Paul? Where's Paul? And then they're supposed to have a shot of Mrs. Voorhees's head, which they did have. But the head was supposed to, smile, Mrs. Voorhees was saying, he succeeded and he killed that last guy, even though they killed him off camera. Weird. So it just seemed like a very strange, and then they just cut that scene out.
Yeah.
And so now everybody's like, did he die? What, how did she get away? Because
I remember we would see that closing shot, that head, and it would zoom in on her head, and me and my boys are like, yeah, I think it moved. Did it move? Because we couldn't back it up, rewind it, and look at it again. You know, it was before VHS. Yeah. I mean, I think it wasn't before VHS. It's just that he didn't have one. It was over at his house, you know. Because VHS were expensive back in the early 80s.
They were.
A couple $1,000s.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to watch something, you had to wait for it to come on. And we were kind of had a thing going, did it move? Yeah, I think it did move. You know,
now I'm going to have to watch it again because I can't.
It doesn't move.
I don't think it moved.
It doesn't move.
Well, because what ended up, the candles are kind of flickering.
Yeah.
And then maybe it looked like it moved. And then there's like a still
frame.
We kind
of wanted it to move, maybe.
Well, and maybe that was kind of like psychically you knew because they were going to have it
right.
Where the head moved, like she was pleased that he
I thought the eyes were going to open or something, you know.
Although they didn't, it's weird to me that they don't show, and like I said, I guess this didn't bother me when I saw it like back on cable back in the day, but when we were watching it last time, like they didn't show how she got away from Jason.
No.
Or where he went, because he just like pops through the window, there's like a big struggle, and then all of a sudden...
Well, you know, I guess... it was just back in the day. It was just a movie, you know.
Yeah.
We knew about theater and artistic license, and then you know you could always go like, well, maybe in the next one it'll show us what happened, because it did that in the second one. In the second one, remember that it went back to show you certain things.
Yeah,
that happened,
the final girl from the
of what happened to her.
That
so
one,
we just
kind of
thought
like
that maybe something had happened. Maybe they'd show it in a later.
And then
movie.
The next one will figure.
But they never
it
did
out.
Show what happened. It didn't.
I don't think they did. I don't remember if that happened because he didn't come back. I don't think for the for the third one. Also, I want to point out too before we end that, and I might have mentioned this on another show, but the very famous scene in part two where Mick Jagger and frizzy-haired boob girl are having sex, and Jason comes in and spears both of them through the bed.
Yeah,
they straight up stole that scene.
Yep, stole it.
Homaged it. Let's put it nicely from Mario Bava's Bay of Blood, aka Twitch of the Death Nerve.
Yeah.
Now, Sean S. Cunningham or Steve Miner, who I think wrote and directed the second one, he said that he had never seen that movie. And I find that hard to believe because the scene is pretty much exactly the same. Now, if you guys have not seen Twitch of the Death Nerve or Bay of Blood, if you want to call it that, it is a very, very slasher-esque. And this is before Black Christmas. This is before Halloween. This is before all of that. It had the POV shots. It had the whole thing with the spear, the whole thing about, like, you know, naked people going off. It was set on a lake and everything. You know, it was different from a slasher in that I'm not going to spoil who the killer is, but the resolution of the killer was more like a giallo style killer. And it's kind of considered a giallo movie, but a lot of the slasher tropes I feel like came from that. And I feel like it doesn't get mentioned as much as maybe Black Christmas does.
Revisiting these two movies, it was weird to rediscover the fact that there's very little violence in them.
And that there's,
and that there's very little nudity in them. I remember them being a lot more
I did
intense.
Too. Like, I remember them being a lot more, and particularly the second one because I'd seen it so many times.
Right.
There's nudity in the second one.
Only a little bit.
But not much.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is that I didn't really even realize this either. Even though the second one is a little more gory than the first one, because the first one's hardly gory at all. It's still not that gory.
No.
And what happened with the first one, I guess the first one, the MPAA passed it without really worrying about much about it because they just thought it was some bullshit, like, independent movie that wasn't going to do anything. But the second one, because the first one had been so popular, they started to, like, go over it the fine-tooth comb. Now, they told Steve Miner that it was going to get an X rating unless he took like some footage out. So I think he ended up having to take almost a minute of footage out. So the shit where like the scene I was just talking about with the spear through the two people, that was actually supposed to show the spear going through them. But if you watch it, you just see Jason going like that.
You
see
anything.
Her face go, oh shit.
Yeah,
and then you just see the bloody spear tip going into the floor like at the bottom.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it was a cut there.
Yeah. It was still enough to scare you when you were that when
it's,
you were
yeah,
that
it's
age.
Still
like,
effective.
Oh, you thought you saw it, but you didn't.
Which, you know, like I said, that's like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre effect. It's like if you edit it well enough,
you thought you saw it
when you didn't actually see it. But it was just kind of instructive to watch it again because I'd seen it so many times and thinking it was kind of gory. And then seeing it again and like, holy crap, they don't hardly show anything. Not at all.
Mm-mm.
But yeah, so.
Nothing compared to what the Italians would do.
Nothing compared. It's like the Italians were making way gorier
a lot
shit.
Worse,
like many years before that came out. So it's very
funny.
Yeah,
and there's a naked woman on screen through the whole damn movie.
Pretty much.
On some of those.
Yeah, the European ones.
Yeah.
That's why there was like a big, you know, especially on 42nd Street back in the days when it was a sleaze pit and it was like all porn theaters and stuff. Yeah. That's why they would show like all those like European horror movies and stuff, because not only were they gorier.
They were X-rated.
But yeah, they had like tits, bush. It's like whole foot. They didn't fucking care. They'd show
anything. They didn't have any hang-ups.
No, they did. It was like, you know what I mean? So yeah, some of the Italian shit from like the 60s and 70s would like...
Pretty weird. Holy crap,
if they tried to like release them over here as an American film, the MPAA would have like fucking killed over dead.
You couldn't release them today.
Yeah, some of them you probably couldn't.
No.
You might get into
the
trouble.
The cannibal ones?
Yeah, like Cannibal Holocaust, Cannibal Ferox, stuff like that. It's funny because we just recently watched fucking Eli Roth that did that homage to the cannibal movies, Green Inferno. And I was expecting that to be much grosser. Because I was like, you're homaging Cannibal Holocaust. And I watched it and I was like, oh, it had a couple like little kind of gross moments, but it was like hardly anything compared to the original. I was like, woo, you got a long way to go to catch up with that one. Yikes. Yeah. But yeah. So anyway, hope you guys have enjoyed this little rambling retrospective of Friday the 13th. Parts 1 and 2, which we actually finally got around to doing on actual Friday the 13th. I'm so fucking proud of myself, so now I can stop talking about it. But yeah, go check them out. They're kind of, you know, they're not really that gory or anything by today's
standards. They're fun,
but they are very important in the history of slasher movies if you're into that kind of stuff, and you do kind of have to see them, you know, if you haven't. So go check them out.